Good morning, and welcome everyone to Credito Real's fourth quarter 2020 earnings conference call. Credito Real issued its quarterly report on Wednesday, February 24, 2021. If you did not receive a copy via email, please do not hesitate to contact us in Mexico City at 525-5228-9753. It is important to note that the presentation and MP3 recordings referred to this call will be available at www.crealmx. Before we begin the call today, I would like to remind you that information discussed in today's call may include forward-looking statements on Credito Real's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risk and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement. With us this morning from Credito Real, we have Mr. Angel Romanos, Executive Chairman and CEO, and Mr. Carlos Ochoa, Deputy CEO. They will discuss on the more important strategic, financial, and operating aspects of the fourth quarter 2020. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Romanos. Please proceed, sir.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us today. I would like to start by saying that all of us at Credito Real hope that you, your families, and dear ones are all in good health and safe. In the face of the prevailing COVID-19 headwinds, Credito Real delivered resilient quarterly and full-year financial results while maintaining its asset quality on the back of a cost-efficient structure and proactive initiatives to preserve the well-being of its people and ensure its financial stability. As you will remember, these initiatives encompassed, firstly, the adoption of preventive protocols to protect our people against COVID-19, following all recommendations from health authorities and setting a high resilience on remote work, reliance on remote work. Second, the implementation of relief programs to support the company's client base, mostly on the SME space. Initiative that besides of succeeding in the retention of valuable customers also contributed to preserve collection, thus preventing any major deterioration in the overall loan portfolio quality. Third, the identification and effective realization of cost-saving initiatives to maintain profitability. Fourth, the adoption of a comprehensive capital management to have an adequate liquidity to comfortably meet our short and medium-term financial obligations and seize opportunities from the economic reactivation expected for the second half of the year. And last but not least, the implementation of a credit origination policy oriented to have long-standing clients that allow us to anchor our best-in-class non-performing loan ratio. In line with these initiatives, Credito Real also devoted considerable resources to recalibrate its business practices, to adapt them to the changes brought by the new normal, as it is a wider automation of processes. Amongst the outstanding developments in the funding front, outstands the launching of our medium-term securities facility for up to $1.5 billion conducted in April 2020 that provided the company with a higher flexibility of financing at an attractive cost. Under this program, at the beginning of 2021, we already carried out the issuance of senior notes to 2028 for $500 million, the first debt placement from a Latin American non-bank financial institution since February 2020, with an appealing interest rate of 8%, as we tapped into the continued accommodative monetary policy worldwide, while boosted the diversification of the company's investor base. Furthermore, this transaction was accompanied by a successful renewal and arrangement of several credit lines for approximately $330 million, with existing and new lending institutions, both domestic and foreign, that despite the backdrop showed a rock-solid confidence in the company. Similarly, in the developments of year 2020, we find the partnership closed with FAMSA, which is oriented to expand our market outreach along the vibrant market of North Mexico, where we expect an annual origination of about 3.5 billion Mexican pesos drawing from the combination of the retail network of AMSA and our solid underwriting and origination capabilities. In this regard, it is worth noting that Crédito Real's role in this commercial agreement lies in the screening, analysis, and funding of loans by the development of its usual business standards. Another development I would like to highlight is the acquisition of a payroll loan portfolio from Banco Ahorro FAMSA carried at the beginning of this year. This transaction is particularly relevant before our strategy of long-term value creation, as it propels the company's flagship business segment by providing attractive yields at relatively low risks. On the ESG side, outstood the company inclusion in the new ESG index launched by the S&P Dow Jones and the Mexican Stock Exchange, and a $100 million credit facility subscribed with the United States International Development Finance Corporation, oriented to improve women entrepreneurs' access to formal finance, thus reaffirming our commitment of serving the unattended segments and further broadening the participation of development banks in our funding. Now, turning to the business segments analysis, over the quarter, as it happened most of 2020, overall origination continued to be largely dictated by COVID-related effects and the implementation of precautory and provisional measures to face it. In this way, hand in hand with the enhancement of collection, we were able to maintain a delinquency level way below the average of the industry and recording net earnings across all business segments. In payroll, loan origination slowed down on a sequential basis due to the new COVID-19 lockdowns imposed at major urban zones in Mexico, but remained above the levels reported in the second quarter, thanks to a growing contribution from our business partnership with Grupo FAMSA, which is currently close to Credifiel's numbers. Non-performing loan ratio in payroll remains stable, and it is worth noting to tell that over the pandemic and to the present day, no block of governmental employees has defaulted on any payment. For 2021, we expect that payroll origination lies above the level seen in 2020 on the back of a normalized economy backdrop resulting from a widespread vaccination. On used car, loan origination remained in a positive trend, primarily supported by the surging demand for used cars, especially in the United States, that maintained the second best delinquency rate company-wide. Breakdown by market, used cars Mexico achieved the record collection levels at quarter end, while origination continued to be favored by a greater preference for the use of private transportation. Meanwhile, used cars USA origination continued to improve, already nearing pre-pandemic levels, thanks to the changes in transportation patterns and new federal unemployment benefits. On the other hand, small and medium-sized enterprise continue to show slow dynamics, particularly in Mexico, as the implementation of the new COVID-19 lockdowns and the high uncertainty have weighed on the business metrics. In this sense, Crédito Real continues striving to help its distressed clients against the unprecedented COVID-19 crisis. Momentarily, and most probably just for 2021, we plan to undertake a soft landing in the participation of SMEs in Mexico, pursuing to reduce our exposure to the assets most exposed to COVID-related developments. Separately, the SMEs origination activity in the USA outperformed that of Mexico, supported by the recalibration of credit profiling, which also contributed to a stable delinquency. As for InstaCredit, a better-than-expected performance was recorded in asset quality that remained stable, coupled with a strong collection, following the introduction of flexible payment options and broader coverage of collection points. Especially noteworthy was the above-average return on assets achieved for the full year in this segment, even at the face of the lockdowns imposed to contain COVID-19 contagions, particularly in Costa Rica, and the grace periods for loan payments enforced in Panama by the government. This remarkable result was largely attributed to improvements in the cost structure, the closing of different business partnerships, and strengthening of key management functions. At this point, I want to state that looking ahead, we will remain committed on the well-being of all our stakeholders, and to weather the challenges, we will continue building on the strategic initiatives already undertaken, drawing for this purpose on the competitive strengths that have already enabled Crédito Real to overcome several crises over the last 25 years. Similarly, to help us navigate along choppy waters, we count on a solid financial position and diversified sources of funding that are reflected in the credit ratings assigned to our debt securities. All in all, we remain confident in our strength to drive long-term value creation, drawing for this end into the effective use of all of our resources alongside a solid approach on sustainable growth. Therefore, for 2021, we expect a growth rate for the total portfolio between 8 and 12% and a non-performing loan ratio in the range of 2% to 3%. And before closing, I would like to express my gratitude to all our investors, associates, partners, and distributors. It is through your hard work and confidence that we have been able to successfully walk into the paramount challenges of 2020, while poised to face the year 2021 with greater clarity of the road ahead. At this point, I hand the call over to Carlos Ochoa, who will discuss in greater detail our financial performance over the last quarter and the whole year. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Angel. Good morning, and thank you all for being part of our quarterly earnings conference call. During the fourth quarter of 2020, total income reached 2.9 billion pesos, down 14.8% when compared to the same period last year in a pro forma basis. This variation is largely attributed to a weakened economic environment brought forth by the pandemic, saying that it has also taken a toll on payrolls canvassing activities, as this has been limited by the implementation of lockdown measures, coupled with a slowdown growth in the SME, interest income, and deployment of the strategic relief program for most troubled clients. In this sense, the headwinds of the economic challenges were partially offset through the incremental contribution from our commercial agreement with Grupo FAMSA. For the full year 2020, interest income decreased 14.5%, reaching 10.2 billion pesos due to the same factors that affected the quarterly performance. Comparable interest income was down 15.4% in the fourth quarter 2020 against the 3.1 billion pesos recorded in the same period last year. For the full year 2020, was recorded an 11.8% decrease in this metric. Interest expense posted 1.2 billion pesos, an annual decrease of 7.9%, mainly derived from the lower average cost of funds that more than offset the company's larger indebtedness. For the full year 2020, interest expense amounted 4.6 billion pesos, down 2% on an annual basis. The foregoing, together with improvements achieved in different credit facilities, given the current environment of low rates, has stimulated an annual decrease of 380 basis points in the average cost of funds that stood at 9.4% in the fourth quarter 2020. While during 2020, the average cost of funds was 8.9%, 390 basis points below the 12.8% recorded in 2019. Consequently, the financial margin was about 1.4 billion pesos for the fourth quarter of 2020, down 30.2% when compared to that of last year. Accumulated financial margin during 2020 totaled 5.6 billion pesos, down 22.5% against 2019. Comparable fourth quarter 2020 and full year 2020, financial margin contracted 25.1% and 18.6% respectively. Provision for loan losses was 558 million pesos, increasing 10.6% and 58.9% in a sequential and annual basis, reflecting the additional generation of incremental reserves to further strengthen our position amid the challenging landscape. For the whole year 2020, this item amounted to 1.9 billion pesos, increasing 7.5% versus that of 2019. Following the build-up of incremental provisions over the year, the cost of risk posted an annual growth of 1.7% and 1.3 percentage points for the fourth quarter and full year 2020, respectively, reaching rates of 4.7% and 4%. The coverage ratio stood at 225.3% compared to the 217.3% and the 219.7% posted in the previous quarter and the same period last year. As a result of higher provisions, a tighter control over delinquent accounts, and more efficient collection. Administrative and promotion expenses summed up 860 million pesos, down 11.4% against the figure recorded in the same period last year, mainly in connection with the software origination activity and, to a lesser extent, to the cancellation of discretionary expenses. For the whole year, 2020, administrative and promotion expenses decreased 10.9%, totaling 3.2 billion pesos, following the same quarterly dynamics. For Q20 and 2020, comparable administrative and promotion expenses decreased 15.3% and 13.8% versus fourth quarter 2019 and 2019 whole year, respectively. It should be noted that following the consolidation of Crédito Real Arrendamiento, further depreciation expenses were recorded, same that amounted to 192 million pesos for the fourth quarter 2020 and 527 million pesos for the full year 2020. Consequently, net income amounted to 115 million pesos, down 73% and 42% versus 4Q19 and 3Q20, respectively, as a result of the effects of the pandemic. Full year 2020, net income decreased 62.1%, totaling 751 million pesos. Return on average equity decreased 780 basis points on an annual basis to 2.7% in the fourth quarter 2020. During full year 2020, return on average equity stood at 4.2%, declining 800 basis points when compared to the same period last year. Excluding the perpetual notes effect, these metrics stood at 3.6% and 5.5% in the fourth quarter and full year, respectively. On the other end, return on average assets contracted 230 basis points to reach 0.6% in the fourth quarter 2020. And during 2020, return on average assets decreased 250 basis points to 1% when compared to 2019. The capitalization ratio contracted by 250 basis points year over year, standing at 31.6% as of December 31st, 2020. Turning to the loan portfolio performance, consolidated loan portfolio totaled 51.3 billion pesos as of quarter end, recording an annual growth of 9%. Despite of the implementation of more selective standards that seek to privilege the risk-adjusted return and asset quality. Likewise, consolidated non-performing loan ratio was 1.8% as of year-end 2020, standing at the same level recorded last year, supported by the implementation of a comprehensive strategy focused on the incorporation of low-risk and high-quality assets alongside the enhancement of collection. Breaking the analysis by business segment, the payroll portfolio amounted to 29.4 billion pesos, up 4.1% when compared to the 28.2 billion pesos recorded in 2019, and its delinquency remained unchanged in a sequential basis. A small and medium-sized enterprise portfolio reached 12.1 billion pesos, increasing 27% year over year. The softened rate of growth compared to the previous years stems from the overall weakness in the business activity that follows the COVID-19 and the adoption of a segmented origination policy focused on clients with limited exposure to COVID-related risks. The non-performing loan ratio for SMEs stood at 0.8% as of quarter end, 40 basis points above that, the figure posted in 2019. In this regard, we are pursuing a recalibration in origination standards, which in combination with two relief programs have certainly contributed to certain impacts on asset quality. In this context, SME's Mexico portfolio growth was 47.3% on an annual basis, totaling 10.9 billion pesos, coupled with a non-performing loan ratio of 0.7%. While SME's USA portfolio amounted to 1.2 billion pesos, a 44% annual decrease, explained by the restricted origination over the year, mainly in the second half, alongside with a non-performing loan ratio of 1.1%. Separately, the used car portfolio totaled 3.9 billion pesos of 10.5% versus year-end of 2019, given the surging demand for non-public affordable transportation. While delinquency in this segment remained at a very low level of 0.9%, 40 basis points below than the number of registered in 2019. In Mexico, the used car portfolio posted a slight annual decrease of 1.4%, amounting to 1.4 billion pesos, giving a tighter origination policy, whereas the non-performing loan ratio stood at 1.1%, remaining at the same level of last year. As for used cars, USA, NPL continued below the 1% mark, combined with an 18.3% annual growth in loan portfolio that was supported by the expansion of unemployment benefits. Separately, Instacred's portfolio reached almost 5 billion pesos, representing an annual growth of 1.6% on the back of a more stable business environment. In terms of portfolio quality, Instacred recorded a better-than-expected performance as the non-performing loan ratio increased only 30 basis points to reach 5.1% at the end of the period. Now, turning to the balance sheet, as of December 31st, 2020, total assets increased 14.5% when compared to that of the same period, 2019, to reach 70.5 billion pesos, driven by the consolidated total portfolio growth and a high cash and investment in securities balance that amounted approximately 2.3 billion pesos, in line with that of 2.5 billion pesos recorded as of year-end 2019. The outstanding debt totaled 49.9 billion pesos, up 20.1% compared to last year, is primarily attributed to arrangements of different credit facilities. Last but not least, as of year-end, the stockholders' equity totaled 16.2 billion pesos, an annual increase of 0.9% following the already discussed factors. With this, I conclude my remarks, and now let me turn back the call to the operator to open the line for Q&A.
Thank you. At this time, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Once again, that's star 1 to ask a question at this time. One moment while we pull for our first question. Our first question comes from Nicholas Rita with Bank of America. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks very much, Carlos and Angel, for the chance to ask questions. I have three questions. The first one, so last week the Senate in Mexico approved some changes to the regulation on payroll lending in Mexico, which I understand are as positive in general. They are enforcing employers to remit payments to the lenders within 4 days of the payroll. There's no mention of interest rate caps, which is clearly a positive, but I wanted to ask you how positive, how much of a game changer do you think this regulation would be if finally approved in the lower house and passed into law? That's my first question. My second question on your capitalization. So I saw in the earnings report you mentioned that shareholders approved a dividend payment on 2019 net profits. And considering the liability management that you did in January, and this dividend payment, then in my numbers, I calculate that debt to equity would increase to 3.5 times, 3.5 times, which I believe is the maximum in the covenants of some of your bank debt. I wanted to ask you about the rationale for going ahead and distributing dividends already. I am not aware really of many other Mexican financials that have already decided to pay out dividends. So if you can, you know, walk us through the rationale for already going ahead with that decision, and if you still think you do not need more capital, more equity capital this year. And then the third question, which is related to the liability management and also your leverage levels, you already took out a portion of the 23s earlier this year, but you can call them, you can call the remaining balance at the price at about where the bond is trading right now, the 23s. Do you plan to use some of the $500 million you raised with the 28 to take out the remaining portion of the 23s? Thanks.
Hello, Nicolas. How are you? This is Angel. I'm going to answer the first question about regulation. We worked very hard with the authorities last year to get to this regulation. We were very involved on how it was developed and how it was done. I think from every angle of it, it's very positive for Crédito Real. And at the end of the day, what this will get us to is much less competition, because now companies will have to be either public or regulated or comply with certain standards that weren't asked before by the authorities, and this will make us one of the strongest companies in the sector. So we're very pleased with the regulation, and we do expect it to go through the lower house, and that should be in the coming weeks. And it will be a very big plus for Crédito Real in the future.
Probably to complement on that one, I think that one of the key aspects about the new regulation, regulatory framework, is the fact that now the payroll product exists as legally exists. In the past, it used to be a mix of a credit or something like that, but right now we have a regulatory framework which is definitely going to be positive altogether, you know, as Angel was mentioning. Another very important aspect of this is that even though we are living, you know, there were no discussions in terms of interest rate caps and so on, one of the key aspects that was addressed in the regulation is the fact of preventing the over-leveraging the customers that, as you might know, is probably the riskiest aspect of this business. So as Angel was mentioning, just to wrap this up, we are pleased with the outcome. We were very involved in this, working with the, you know, with the legal teams and so on, and I think it's going to be positive for the industry and definitely positive for Crédito Real. Now, turning to your second question in terms of capitalization, let me start by the dividend, you know, by the payout. You know, for starters, as you might recall, those 75 cents per share were determined early last year. It was a year ago. And basically what we are stating at this point is that at some point we will be paying that dividend that corresponds for 2019, not for 2020. And that's basically where we are standing. When it comes to the capitalization, and the way we are seeing the capitalization altogether is that we are going to release a lot of pressure over the capitalization as long as we unwind down the SMEs portfolio. And basically by doing so, definitely it's going to release pressure over the capitalization, and probably at some point we won't be needing more cash, extra cash. I would say that how we are seeing things, you know, with different initiatives from different businesses, such as the payroll business in particular, where we are seeing a ramp up in terms of the origination this year, I think at some point the high NIM products that we carry are going to grow farther than the others, and the most capital intensive, as the SMEs, are going to, we are going to be unwinding them. So basically, that's where we are standing. And in terms of liability management, as for your third question, we are very pleased with the outcome. I mean, we are very pleased with tender for roughly $200 million, and we, made all the covenant set consistent with all the different facilities that we have outstanding. And I don't know, at this point, we're not thinking in buying back more of those 2023s outstanding until we see the dynamics of the whole business all together.
Okay. Thanks, Carlos. Thanks very much for that.
Thank you, Nicolas.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Gilberto Garcia from Barclays. Please proceed with the question.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for the call. A couple of questions. In your new disclosure by business segment, you show that interest income from the payroll business specifically was down 30%, despite positive growth in the portfolio. Could you please explain what drove this significant decline in the yield?
Sorry, Gilberto, I didn't get the first part, the figure. Could you repeat that, please?
Yes. So you, in the disclosure by business segment, you show that interest income in the payroll business specifically was down 30% year on year, despite portfolio growing a little bit in the low single digits. What drove this significant decline in the yields for the business?
Yeah, I mean, there were a number of factors. Some of them, I mean, when it comes to the payroll business, the fact of having a very soft origination with the teachers, which tend to be the segment with the highest interest rate, and as you can see with all this, with all the challenges that we faced last year, that led to a much softer origination, specifically with teachers. On the other hand, we had an effect, for the full year, we had an effect of around 400 million pesos or something, and that was associated to FX and something like that. What we are seeing at this point altogether, now that we see a much dynamic origination in the payroll and in segments such as the teachers and other segments of the business with higher NIMs, I think that we should be seeing an improvement. Right now, I think what I can tell you is the FAMSA, they are, reaching its full potential. I think that we should be originating, a considerable amount with them for they are easily becoming now the Arthur distributor, and definitely that's going to enhance the origination and improvement also in the yield and in the NIM as well. As you can see, and something that we've been very emphatic about it is that a softer origination, given that we generate an income provision, tends to affect the yield negatively, and that's basically where we are standing. So it was a combination of factors, but basically we would expect the 2019 to see an improvement there.
Okay, and secondly, press reports indicated that you extended a loan for more than $30 million that has been overdue. In a statement to the stock exchange, you said that you issued this loan in the ordinary course of business. I understand you might be limited on what you can say about this specific loan, but more generally, can you comment on whether you have any such other jumbo loans outstanding? And if so, what sort of rate do you charge on those loans, and what guarantees do you typically ask for?
Look, all across the board in the SMEs business, the rates that we charge, all across the board, the rates that we charge are something around the 25%. If you think in those terms, typically, and you can see it from, I will answer it, on two fronts. If you think in terms of the average ticket size, well, it stands something around the 10 million pesos in the case of the leasing business, and probably much lower in the case of the factoring and in the case of the credit. That's basically where we are standing. However, yes, we could have some specific operations such as the one that has been disclosed, and that's basically, but those even though we do that type of facilities, those are not, you know, if you look at the average ticket size, they are clearly not the most common thing. Now, Bing, what happened with this one? I mean, we disclosed this operation. If you remember the time when we disclosed this operation, it was we disclosed this operation. The press release was because we were on the middle of the of issuing the 2028, basically. So normally, what I'm trying to say is that from a net strategic perspective, the company tends not to get engaged with the press altogether. That's a rule that we have. However, considering that we were in the middle of issuing a facility, and for the transparency's sake, that's when we disclosed the press release. Well, basically, that's where we're standing. When you are asking your question in terms of the collateral or in terms of or the guarantees or whatever that we have on the SMEs business, yeah, a lot of them involve, I don't know, houses, you know, land and things like that. But definitely, I mean, what I can tell you at this point is the key aspect of our business is to focus not on the guarantees, but to focus on the cash and the cash flows of the business. That's how we grant those loans. And that's basically how the business works. Having said so, if at some point we perceive that there's going to be trouble, you know, for collecting or so, we try to enforce different strategies that can be up to repossess assets or whatever. And that's basically where we're standing.
Okay, thank you. And lastly, do you have any guidance or ranges for net income for the year?
Soon to say. I mean, our view is that if you look at the, I mean, specifically if you think in terms of cost of risk, if you think in terms of cost of risk, it increased dramatically over the year. Yes. And that's probably explained, it's mostly explained because of the relief programs. And as you know, I mean, whenever you change the original structure of the facility that you granted, you increase your provision base. So what we are expecting is that in order to start releasing provision, when we start releasing provision, that's going to happen at some point at the end of this quarter or at some point in the second quarter. If that happens, if that is the case, I think that we will see a much better year than what we experienced last year. Hard to say the figure, or hard to say a definite figure.
Understood. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Ernesto Gabilondo with Bank of America. Please proceed.
Hi, good morning, Angel and Carlos. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question is on your expectation for non-interest expenses. We continue to see that the depreciation of the leasing business continues to put pressure on expenses. So how should we think about OPEX growth this year? Should it be growing above inflation? And then my second question is on your capital ratio. When looking at it in terms of equity to assets, it was reduced to 23% from 26% in 2019. It seems okay, but we have seen other listed Mexican banks with an important excess capital. So how comfortable are you to pay the dividend that was postponed in 2019? And then for my last question, can you share how are you seeing the ROE for this year? Would it be reasonable to expect low to mid single digit? Thank you.
Hi, Ernesto. I mean, as I mentioned at the beginning, I mean, one of the goals that we have for this year is to unwind the SMEs portfolio. I mean, it's not so hard. I mean, if you think in the duration of the facilities, in particular in the leasing, on the leasing side, on the leasing side, given the duration is something around 40 months altogether, you know, on the average, the duration is 40 months, that's probably going to be the one that reduces the least. However, I mean, if we end up, you know, instead of having, you know, a concentration above 20% in the SMEs, you know, in the consolidated SMEs business, if we end up having something between the 12 and the 15%, that's definitely going to help us in terms of the capitalization and also in terms of the whatever is expenses associated with the business altogether, no? But that's basically how we are standing. As you know, most of the part last year, we were very prudent. We were very selective in terms of originating new loans. And that should continue for the remaining of for this year as well, and even more because we are going to be unwinding this book. So basically that would be, I mean, hard to say if this reaches, you know, if the consolidated portfolio in the SMEs business stands at something around the 15%, that should definitely help us a lot with the cash requirements for the company and the capitalization altogether. Coming to your second question, to the second portion of your question, well, definitely the dividend is an issue that we are taking, you know, we are thinking a lot about that one. I mean, you could have on the front of the fixed income side, definitely there are some considerations, and the most important one in that one is that we are not going to risk our rating. We are convinced that the ratings is a key differentiator. We saw that, you know, when tapping the dollar market after 12 months closed for us. So definitely the main aspect behind the decision, of making the payout is going to lie on the fact of protecting the rating or not risking the ratings. So that's basically where we are standing. In terms of ROEs, I think it should be improving. I mean, if you think in terms of provisions, the amount of money that we have, you know, embedded in the provision lines, I mean, if we start, you know, releasing provisions due to a better performance of the book, I think that the ROE should be trending upwards. Probably to the, I don't know, probably it's going to be, you know, hopefully, you know, to the double digits, but it's definitely going to be in between the 5 and the 10% at this point. That's what I'm thinking.
For 2021?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Renato.
Our next question comes from Matthew Breckenridge with DSC Meriden. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, yes, thank you. This is, a question more about the direction of the business. The debt continues to rise, and the loan portfolio is rising at a much lower rate than your debt is rising, and there's not an increase in cash, and your net income positive, and yet interest margin continues to drop. So I guess the question is, when do those trends start to reverse? When do you start to see the balance sheet increase or the asset side of the balance sheet increase faster than the liability side? And when do you expect margins to increase? Because it seems like you're adding debt to put new loans on the balance sheet that are not earning the same cost of capital as prior, and cash is not going up. So how does we reconcile this, and when does that begin to reverse?
Yeah, I mean, what I can tell you from a net strategic perspective for the company for this year is that we are focusing on our most efficient use of our equity. Basically, that's the main challenge. That's how we, you know, in terms of direction-wise, that's going to be definitely the main driver. Having said so, you know, that's the underlying behind the decision of, that's the underlying aspect behind the decision of unwinding the SME's portfolio. It is our most capital-intensive product, And definitely, we cannot charge the same interest rates. I mean, we have different NIMs. If you compare that to the, you know, for example, in the case of the the payroll business, for example. So, what was the attractive part? What was the attractive part about the SMEs business? What brought us here? And that's what I'm trying to explain. What brought us here is that if you think about our business model in the SMEs, in which we were relying on a relatively small customer base, very recurrent customers, that having a product with a much higher average ticket size help you in terms of cost of risk, right? If you look at the improvements over the years when the SMEs business were, you know, the main driver of growth, that led to a decline in the cost of risk. What happened last year, and that's been probably the most important aspect about the, you know, the pressure over the NIM and the pressure over the, you know, the net income, has been that it, you know, the other way around. You know, higher average ticket sizes led to a much higher cost of risk. So basically that's where we are standing, and that's the rationale. What I would expect, and especially given that we have a couple of initiatives associated with FAMSA, that we could ramp up, that we could increase the origination in the payroll business for the remaining of the year. And by doing so, what's definitely going to happen is that the concentration that we have in the payroll business, which is going to be, which is one of our high, our product with the highest NIM, definitely is going to help us. So that's basically where we are standing. So, and in terms of growing the debt and in terms of growing the, yes, you have a point there, but it was basically, you know, adjusting to the, you know, to the pandemic during the last year, and definitely we should, you know, turn it around for this year.
Okay, as a follow-up, you have, in 2021 and 22, you have a number of bank credit lines and securitizations that need to be rolled. And in 22 and 23, you have bonds. How are the discussions with the banks about rolling potentially past the maturities of the bonds? Have the banks asked for additional collateral? Have they asked for collateral at all? We'll have those discussions. Proceeded.
I mean, think about last year. I mean, we were able, you know, for the full year, we were able to roll, I don't know, it was something around 11 billion pesos or something like that. That was for 2020. So basically, we felt the support from both local and international banks all the year long. So if you think about 2021, we have something, we have to refinance something around 13 billion pesos or something like that. Some of it has already been, you know, paid down. For example, $50 million of a Barclays facility, we paid that down with the issuance of the 28s. So basically, I think that we, if the same dynamics that we saw last year continue for this year, we should not have problems rolling those 70% of, which amounts roughly 10 billion pesos, we should not have any problems, you know, rolling those over. Not, I mean, most of the, if you think about the, if you think in terms of collateral and things like that, what we saw last year, I mean, for starters, we rely most of our funding, you know, given the, you know, clearly, most of, if you think about the senior facilities that we have outstanding, all of them are unsecured. But when it comes to the credit lines, what we saw, we didn't see an increase in the collaterals, but what we saw was mostly, you know, an increase in the spread. That was basically, you know, associated with the, you know, with the situation last year. But in any case, we feel comfortable that for 2021, we will be okay refinancing those. And now thinking further, you know, into 2022, well, basically the challenges that you have over there is to refinance 170 million, the CHF, 170 million, and then we have the call of the hybrid at some point. I think it's November or something like that. And definitely we're looking into it, but basically we try to address all the, you know, the amortizations and the refinance for this year first.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Lamar Salah with Barings. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, Carlos. Hello, team. Thank you very much for taking my questions. So I've got three questions. So the first question is with regards to your collections. You have indicated in the past that, you know, when your collections are around 80 to 90%, you feel comfortable. At the same token, you have extended facilities to existing clients. I'm just wondering, when you adjust the extended facilities for those existing clients, what is the cash collection on your book? If you could elaborate on that. So, and question number two is with regards to your payroll pension mix. Could you please refresh what the mix is like, the federal pension, state, and corporate pension in that book? And the third question is, I think it is probably an easy one for you. So in July 2020, you had this litigation thing with Chiapas, one of the states. I'm wondering whether there's any updates with regards to that. Thank you.
The way we see, probably the rule of thumb that we use when it comes to the collection is that as long as it remains on the 8 billion per quarter range, we are okay, right? If you look at the trend that we saw for the last year, specifically last year, it stood, you know, close to this 8 billion range that I'm mentioning you. What happens is that given that most of the facilities that were under a form of relief were on the SME front and amounted exclusively for 22% of the book at its peak, that didn't affect it much. It didn't affect that much the collection altogether. It affected the most for the third Q. So if you look at the figures for the third Q, it was shy of those 8 million that I'm mentioning, and this is basically because we were at the peak of the relief program for the SMEs. Definitely it's a competitive advantage of the company is the resiliency that we saw for the payroll business. The resiliency that we saw for the payroll business, that it's driving that collection figure up quarter over quarter. We don't see a reason for that to change. Going further to the second question of the payroll business, as a rule of thumb, the concentrations that we have are either with teachers or with pensioners. What's been changing more recently, specifically for the third Q, for the fourth Q, is that given the challenges that we are facing in particular with the teacher, that shifted a little bit to other government agencies. Right now, the two concentrations that we have are, teachers, probably 30, which traditionally is something around 35, and right now they amount for roughly 30%. And in the case of the pensioners, they amount basically roughly the same, 30%, 32. What's been more dynamic, where we are increasing the concentration are when what we call, AAA state-level agencies. Those are, government agencies that are reliable in terms of the collections and so on. And that was, probably the driver of growth for the 4Q, in the payroll business. But that's normally the rule of thumb. What we would expect for this year is to increase the origination, to increase the origination with the teacher. And that's definitely going to have a positive effect on the yield and on the NIM altogether. And finally, addressing your question of Chiapas, we are collecting. It was a measure taken by the governor of the state of Chiapas. It was a unilateral measure taken by them that was easily overturned with a judiciary process. But basically, we are collecting, and the effect that it has had altogether is that we are not originating anymore. We are not originating anymore in Chiapas, And that's basically the sole effect that it has had over the business. Looking forward, what we see, I mean, and definitely it's one of the positive aspects about the regulatory framework, the new regulatory framework, is that these type of measures are not going to be, are going to be restricted. So that's definitely going to be positive for the business, That's why we feel so optimistic about having a new regulatory framework.
So on that chapter, like if you assume like you're not originating anymore, what is the quantum of that loan book, and by when is it going to phase out entirely out of your book?
Yeah, I mean, basically, if you look at what we had over there in Chiapas, that amounted roughly 3 to 5% or something like that. So that's basically the fraction of the portfolio that we are, unwinding, running down that book, given that we cannot originate anymore and that we are not originating anymore in the state of Chiapas, that leads to a softer origination. But that's basically the concentration that we have in that state is roughly 3 to 5%, not more than that.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Carlos Rivera with Double Line. Please proceed.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my questions. The first one is regarding the outlook for the NIM. And I've been hearing, of course, all the comments and the expected improvement and the reasons for that. But just trying to get any, if you have any numeric target, any guidance. And then here I'm looking at the figure that you put in the press release where you show how the NIM declined from 17.5 to 11.5. Of course, some of these impacts from COVID, FX loss, mixed impact, I would guess those are going to be not repeating anymore. But do you have any target for how fast can the NIM recover and by when? That would be my first question. Thanks.
Yeah, I would say that if by the end of the year the NIM stands around the 14%, above the 13 or something close to the 14%, it's going to be okay. How do you reach that? How you manage to accomplish that? On the first hand, I'm thinking exclusively about the product mix. For starters, unwinding the SMEs portfolio, which naturally, given the average ticket size, naturally tends to have the lowest NIM. And on the other hand, by increasing the origination in the payroll business, which we believe is something very doable, not only with the different initiatives that we've been discussing, such as the FAMSA deal and so on and so forth, but also on the other lines of business which tend to behave very well, such as the cars and the products outside Mexico. So I would say that if by the end of the year we see an improvement and leads to the above the 13% or close to the 14% with these several measures, I think we're going to be okay. Just another aspect, important aspect about, trying to explain the decline in the 17% to the close to the 12% that you are seeing for the full year, it is the consolidation of the arrendadora that leads an important fraction of it. I think that it's something around the 3% or something like that. It is explained by the consolidation of the arrendadora. So going back again to what I was telling you, given that we end up unwinding that book, definitely it's going to have a positive effect on the NIM altogether by the end of the year.
Okay, thank you. And my second question is regarding the funds, but not the partnership with them, but the portfolio that you acquired. How much do you think is that going to be contributing in terms of either net income or interest income, and when would we start to see that contribution?
That should happen this year.
We bought the – hello, how are you? This is Angel. We bought the portfolio at the beginning of the year, so you should start seeing results from that early this year, starting this quarter. We're collecting for it already. We have already received two or three payments from that portfolio. And We own 33% of the whole portfolio. We bought it at 40 cents to the dollar, so it was a very, very good price that we acquired it. And we have a consortium with Promecap and Credit Suisse, and we divide the deal in thirds. So we own one-third of that portfolio. And you should start seeing that come into our margin starting this quarter.
Yeah, and probably the way to give you an idea about how we assess, how we normally assess when we buy a portfolio out, what we tend to do is that we assess its profitability based on IRRs. So what we would expect at the end of the day from this acquisition is to have IRRs for the full transaction of something around the 45, between the 45 and the 7, and the 50%. So it's definitely something very attractive. And not only that, because it gives us the possibility to refinance to that same customer base and to increase the penetration in the northern states and so on. So definitely it's going to be, you know, accretive for the company.
Okay. Thank you. And the last question that I have is the change in equity, basically a decline of about $900 million. Is that everything related to the appreciation of the peso, or is there anything else there?
No, it's you know, basically the peso appreciation led to a decline of ₱1 billion, roughly $1.54 billion, okay, or something like that. If the peso depreciates to a 21 range, in the range of the 21, that figure should, you know, net out. It's going to become zero. So basically that happened because if you look at the peso at the end of last year, it stood at 1990, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. Just wanted to confirm there was nothing else on that account. Thank you very much for the answers, Carlos and Angel.
Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Nick Dimitrov with Morgan Stanley. Please proceed.
Hi there. Most of my questions have been answered. I have two left, though. I was looking at your NPL guidance of 2-3% for 2021, and currently we're at 1.83%. So I was wondering, it seems like you expect some more asset quality weakness coming from somewhere. And I was wondering where it's going to come from and whether the deferred loans, which are still at 5.2% of total loans, will probably explain some of this. I was also under the impression that most of the deferred loans would have exited the deferral programs by year end. So I was kind of surprised to see that you still have a, you know, material exposure to that type of book. So that's going to be my first question in terms of, you know, your NPL guidance and then the deferred loan book.
Yeah, look, the NPL, that's our long-term guidance for the NPLs. We've been having that figure for a number of years already, to the 2-3% range, and definitely we don't expect that to change. What happened differently for this year was more on the front of the cost of risk rather than on the NPLs front. That's basically, I would say that is going to be basically the big difference between the two, you know, the what we saw in the past and the NPLs. We wouldn't expect the NPLs to change much more, but what we would expect is that the coverage ratio should trend downwards. That's what we would be expecting. Yes, 5%. Yeah, 5% under a form of relief programs. Yes, but, you know, if you recall correctly, we had lockdowns for most part of December. So that's when we needed to start granting, you know, a form of relief, especially on the SMEs business. But other than that, I would say that definitely is going to be declining by the end of this quarter, and we would see, you know, a normalization in the coverage ratio, both on the coverage ratio and in the cost of risk, by the end of this quarter, or probably at some point in the second Q.
And would you give some guidance then on the cost of risk then? You're talking about normalization, possibly release in reserves. Are we going to see cost of risk moderate from, I don't know, Q4 was like 4.64, as for my calculations. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, to tell you the truth, I mean, considering all the challenges that we faced last year, we feel comfortable with a cost of risk around the 4.5%. Definitely, we feel comfortable about that one, with a cost of risk about the 4.5%. I would expect, hopefully, that to come down, you know, definitely to come down to the previous levels, probably more close to the 4%. But here you're going to have another difference. I mean, if you see one of the things, as I mentioned at some point, one of the things that drove the cost of risk down was the growth rates that we experienced, especially in 2018 to 2019, with the SMEs portfolio. Not that we are unwinding that book, now that we intend to unwind that book, probably should be stay at the 4% range, but not at the 3% range that you saw in the 4Q, for example.
Makes sense. And the deferred loan book, the 5.2%?
Yeah, I would expect this, you know, something around the 4%. I mean, it's okay in terms of cost of risk.
Okay. And my last question is going to be, I noticed that your foreclosed assets jumped to 1.4 billion from 32 million, I think, in Q3. So what explains this increase? Is it the wind down of, I thought it was the wind down of the SME book, but it could be also related to auto loans. So what is driving the increase in foreclosed assets?
Basically, as I mentioned at some point, the focus of the company is on the cash. However, by the end of last year, we perceived that, you know, we could have a, you know, an increase in the NPLs, or we could have an increase in the cost of risk or something, we start negotiating with the customers for whatever we have under, you know, as a guarantee or as a collateral. So how that normally works, yes, it was on the SME front, and a number of loans on the SME front, and how that works is that, well, you move it from the portfolio line, you move it on the foreclosed asset line, and for that you have to, they have to be appraised, and not only that, they have they are tested for impairment on a regular basis. I think it has to be every quarter or something like that. And if we see a form of impairment, which we wouldn't expect, definitely you would have to increase the provisions. But we saw that the decision that we made at the last year was, you know, in order to keep the NPLs down and in order of not increasing further the cost of risk, basically we negotiated with customers and we repossessed the assets. That's basically it.
Okay, makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick.
Our next question comes from John Hogg with Mizuho. Please proceed.
Hey, good morning, Angel. Good morning, Carlos. I hope you guys are well. Again, a lot of questions answered. I know there's a new – well, I have two things, and you've touched on them during the call. One was, I know the regulation is expected to be positive for the sector, more transparency, some caps on to not over-leverage the clients. Can you maybe speak about what – what may be the potential negatives in terms of the lenders like yourselves to, you know, with this regulation? Are they going to put, you know, is there potential for caps anywhere else that they might do to you? And then second was a gentleman earlier in the call touched on the payroll sector and touched on the origination growth and then the decline in interest income. I'm wondering, you mentioned a few factors. You said, there were several factors involved there that we saw the interest income tail off. Could you go into that a little more? Because that's been something that's been a source of confusion, over the last quarter, that people have brought up to me over the last quarter. And maybe if you can go into it a little more. Thank you very much.
Hey, Jörn. Well, I would say, I mean, even though we feel optimistic about the regulation for the payroll business, I mean, I think that there are more positives than negatives. Probably at some point that could lead to a pressure on the yield. You know, that's probably the only negative aspect that I can think of. But if you think about the experiences in countries such as Colombia or Brazil prior to the regulation, what you immediately saw was an increase in the penetration, and that's what we would expect at this point. However, if you think at this point, for example, if that leads to some form of pressure, you know, coming from the, you know, our pressure on the yield, definitely it's going to be compensated, because if you recall correctly, you know, with the payroll business, normally what happens is that you could have up to 90 days to collect the first payment. Once that you disburse a loan, it could take up to 90 days to get the first payment. So basically what we see, and one of the aspects that this piece of regulation is addressing, is to limit the times where the government agencies pay you back, and definitely it's going to be positive. That's the only thing that I would expect, you know, that's the only thing that I would expect as a negative. And especially, you know, if you think about the experiences in the other countries such as Brazil or Colombia. And now, going back to the NIM, yes, I mean, if you look at the press release, we included a chart trying to explain a little bit the pressure over the NIM, you know, and altogether the decline in the yield. Some of it, you know, it was, you know, associated to the payroll business, product mix, and basically what we tried to do, you know, in the press release is to explain, you know, to quantify the different aspects that affected the yield and put pressure over the NIM. You know, they range from the FX losses to the consolidation of the Crédito Real arrendamiento and pressure over the payroll business, you know, especially because we were not originating for teachers. We were not as dynamic originating with teachers, and we increased the concentration in the state-level agencies that are not as, you know, that in yield-wise are not as attractive, but definitely we believe that we could revert a number of those aspects for this year.
Our next question comes from Nicholas Rita with Bank of America. Please proceed.
Yeah, thanks. Again, I have a follow-up. There's a concept that Carlos and Angel that you mentioned many, many times in this call, which is unwinding the SME loan book. And I wanted to ask you if you are talking about a specific business within that book, leasing, factoring, working capitals, or about the entire SME loan book. And I assume here you're talking, what you mean is that you plan to grow less in the SME loan book than in other parts of the business, not just letting that SME loan book amortize and just collect on that. I mean, it's over 20% of the loan. But I wanted to clarify what exactly you mean by unwinding the SME loan book.
I would say that it's going to be, you know, at the end of the day, what we would expect is that instead of having a concentration of 23%, which currently stands, is to have, you know, at the end of the year, something around the 12% and the 15%. That definitely leads to a softer origination, a much softer origination, or stopping originating for different products.
Okay, understood. And then related to this, you also said in the call that you expect this kind of, let's call it the reduced exposure to SMEs to have a positive impact on your capital ratios, right? And, I mean, if I look at your capital ratio, I mean, you gave us guidance for growth in the loan book of 8 to 12% this year, right? And the ROE, the return on equity last year was below 5%. And I believe that you gave guidance to Ernesto previously, and then I will ask you to repeat if you can the guidance for ROE this year. But it seems that it's going to be a great challenge for you to have a return on equity which is equal to that 8 to 12% loan growth, in which case your capital ratios would continue worsening. So that's why I was asking if you already have plans to inject more capital into the business this year in order to prevent that deterioration in your capital ratios, if that's clear.
Look, no, I'm not sure. And let me tell you the figures that the calculations that I make. If you think that we could grow the book something around the 5 to 10%, we could grow the book without getting new money, right? As long as we decrease the concentration in the SMEs portfolio, that definitely is going to be mostly debt neutral, right? So it wouldn't have a pressure on the capitalization. On the other hand, if we shift, you know, if we change the concentrations from the product with the lowest NIMs, such as the leasing or whatever, to the other ones, you know, teachers on the payroll front or used cars or whatever we have in Central America, definitely it's going to be the other way around. And that's basically how we're thinking of it.
Okay, thanks very much, Carlos.
Thank you, Nicolas.
Thank you.
Our next caller is Natalia Corfield from JP Morgan. Please proceed.
Hi, Carlos, and thank you for taking my question. Most of them were already answered, but I have two left. One is about your other accounts receivables from subsidiaries. This increased quite a lot relative to last year. So if you could give us a refresher of what these are and why there was such an increase, that would be great. And the other one is a curiosity related to the new payroll law. And now I understand that's more regulated. It's going to be similar to Brazil and Colombia, of course, without the caps. And you mentioned in the call that you think that this would be good, and one of the reasons was because of competition, because many entities are not regulated. But my question is, wouldn't this be a reason for large financial institutions like Banorte, BBVA, to start entering the segment now that's more regulated? So those are my two questions. Thank you.
When it comes to the other accounts receivable, I would say that the big change that you see is the income paid in advance to the distributors. And let me explain you that line. If you think that, you know, that the commissions that are traditionally paid to the sales forces are something around the 12 to the 15%. Basically, the distributors need, and those are paid up front to the sales forces, the distributors, they need some cash, working capital, in order to operate. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to, you know, to keep the sales forces. What happened during this year, and if you look at the big jump that you see from the 2.4 to the 3.3%, and how you amortize that, receivable. Basically, when you are collecting money, instead of paying back 50% of the interest, you know, the interest collected, paying it back to the distributor, basically what you do is that you keep more than the 50%, you keep a larger amount to ourselves, and that's how we amortize that. That receivable. Now, what happened this year is that, remember that for 3 months we basically didn't collect it from the IMSS because of the relief program granted to the pensioners. So basically what happened is that, given that we didn't collect, well, we collected, but we lent it back, the distributors didn't get his share of the income, and we didn't amortize that one. So that's basically the explanation in the largest fraction of it. As for the others, you know, there are different numbers of receivables that we keep, taxes that are associated, the VAT associated to the leasing business, and so on and so forth. But the bulk of it, the largest explanation, comes from what I'm telling you, which is basically the income paid in advance to the distributors. And that's basically how it is. And now, coming to the competition part of your question, you know, when it comes to the payroll business, coming to the competition part of the question, yes, potentially that could lead, but however, think that the main differentiator, I mean, think that one of the, definitely the main aspect that the customers value the most is the service that we provide them. You know, it's like a lot of our customers, they live in places with banking penetration, with limited banking penetration, and so on. So I would say it's the other way around. I mean, in the history of Crédito Real, we continue to, you know, to gain market share from the banks, and I don't see a big change immediately. We are more positive and we are more constructive about the new regulatory framework. Definitely is going to address many aspects, many challenges of the business. And as I was mentioned, and as I mentioned a number of times during the call, we are convinced that this is going to be positive for the company.
Okay. Thank you, Council. Just a follow-up on the other accounts receivables. You explained the income paid in advance to distributors, but I don't know, couldn't you give a little bit of color on the other accounts receivables?
I take that offline and I give you the specific details with, I will ask Renata to tell you the specific details about the others, because they are mostly associated to the distributors in the payroll business, but I will tell Renata to give you a call and try this offline.
All right. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Natalia.
As I find a reminder, press star one at this time for any questions. And at this point, we have no questions in the queue, so the question and answer session has concluded. And thank you all for being in today's conference call, and you may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you, everyone.